Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff. We are back, and in theory, we are better than ever this year. Tony, I guarantee you that this podcast tonight will be the best podcast we've done all year.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that no podcast that we have done so far this year will top this podcast.
Well, there's something done about that.
Yes. Yes. Episode number 114, we are going to talk about connecting with your alumni. But before we get to that, we want to thank our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust and All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Love what Juan Carlos has done for our family. We took our daughter's car in. She needed some, excuse me, I got so excited about Ruiz Auto that I got choked up there. Daughter needed some work done on her college car, brought it in, got to take it care of. Great stuff there at Ruiz Auto. So want to thank them. Tony, uniform numbers 14 here. I've got some great baseball players. Let's play two. Ernie Banks, Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle. One of my underrated favorite players of my childhood, Jim Rice. Always loved the Red Sox, always loved the old architecture, the old ballparks. Dan Fouts as a quarterback, had quite a few quarterbacks listed, but I felt like Dan Fouts was the only one that deserved to be mentioned here. Stefan
Coriel.
Yeah, Eric Coriel, the lightning bolts, as I called him when I was a youngster. So, who you taking, Lions helmets or old school Charger helmets?
I would take the Lions helmet, but probably the Chargers powder blue uniforms.
Gotcha. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And then Stephon Diggs, the great wide receiver here. So, but I've got two point guards with the uniform number 14, both Hall of Famers as point guards. Both of them coached in the NBA. One of them won an NBA championship, actually went into the Basketball Hall of Fame both as a player and a coach. What do you got, buddy?
Ooh, that little hint there at the end threw me.
Yeah.
Player and a coach. Number 14. Shoot.
One is the first great NBA superstar. The Steve Nash of the 1950s.
I'm going to say Bob Cousy.
Bob Cousy is good. It's good you said Bob Cousy. He is one of them. The other one played his career in the 60s, won a championship in the late 70s, coached into the 90s, I believe, maybe into the 2000s a little bit as an NBA head coach. Let's see, Atlanta Hawks, Cleveland Cavaliers, huh?
No, not Doc Rivers.
No.
Atlanta Hawks, Cleveland Cavaliers.
At one point, I think he was the all-time leader in wins in NBA history as a coach.
Lenny Wilkins?
There you have it, my friend. You got it.
Huh. Did not know Lenny was a point guard.
Yep. He was a point guard, Hall of Famer. Led the league in assists a couple of times, I think. So, yeah, really good. So,
good ball?
Yeah. He could ball a little bit. Yeah, good ball player. So, episode number 114. This came to mind, Tony. I don't know if you saw it or not. Yesterday, I believe it was, Iowa State men's basketball celebrated the 25th anniversary of their 2000 Elite Eight team. Of course, that team lost to that great Michigan State team in the Elite Eight in the Palace. A lot of great players on that team. Unfortunately, that game is remembered by most people with Larry Eustace getting kicked out at the end of the game. But bringing teams back, bringing alums back, and I thought it would be good. You know, this is a great time of year to spice up your seasons, to change things up. And I think it's important that you have a good, solid alumni network within your program, especially if you've been there for a while. And even if you haven't been there for a while, I think it's good to try and establish an alumni network when you have the opportunity to do so. And that's kind of where I kind of got this idea from, Tony.
Yeah. Incidentally, one of the guys who was a manager on the Iowa State team, a friend of mine, Adam DeJody is his name, and he was there yesterday and put some stuff out there on X about his experience with that team and how much he loves Iowa State. And so, yeah, I think this is a great topic and obviously really relevant to what's going on right now.
Yeah. So, I could go ahead and get started with this, Tony. I think, like I said, one of the first things you want to try and do is come up with some sort of alumni database, if possible. Now, an alumni database is a little bit different than what it used to be. You could put this in your phone now or that type of thing. But I know when I was at SCUT, I tried to track down as many of the alums I spent. We had all the old yearbooks in the guidance office. And so one day I grabbed all the yearbooks from before I had been there. And the school wasn't very old at that point, but I still wanted to try and begin that process of trying to connect with as many of those old players and those alums as I could. So, you know, name, address, phone number. At the time, Facebook was starting to become relevant. But I think having some sort of list in some way, shape, or form, maybe on an Excel spreadsheet, I think that's where everything starts at.
Yeah, I think that is definitely where it starts at and helps you do a variety of things. But I think that is step one. You've got to build that connection, and reach out and provide updates and stuff like that. Maybe one of the things you could do if you can, come across like numbers or emails or whatever, if you do like a newsletter or whatever, just kind of give them some updates on what's going on in the program and what your thoughts are in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What's your first salvo here, Tony?
One of the things I've seen, I know you obviously know Jacob Brindle from Snow Valley.
Yep.
One of the things with following him on social media that I've seen that the Cascade boys team that Jacob used to lead is doing is they're bringing alumni to come back and talk with their players, whether that's before or after practice. And I think that's a really good thing to do, especially if it's a recent player that's out on, Christmas break. Maybe they're playing college ball or whatever, and they happen to be back. But I think that's a great thing to do there as well, to keep them involved that way, to have them come in and talk and share their experiences and words of wisdom.
Yeah. No, that was on my list as well. And I know one year, on multiple occasions, I brought back some of the former players that played for me when I was at SCUT. And, one time I was eavesdropping a little bit. And it was kind of one of the best compliments I feel like I've ever gotten. One of the players said, Coach Plum's going to be tough on you, but at the end of it, I look back on it. Yeah, he was tough on me. Yeah, there were times where I would get frustrated, but he was really, really fair. And you're going to appreciate everything that he does for you. You might not appreciate it now, but you're going to appreciate it later on. And I was like, wow, I did not see that coming, type of a thing. But I think those are because, as players, Tony, you say, coach doesn't like me. Why is he doing this? Why? And I think it's good, don't you think, to have somebody who's been through the experience to say, hey, yeah, it's not easy. If it were easy, everybody would do it. But there's a method to the madness, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think, if it's somebody that's, a handful of years older than them, like we talked about, that's somewhat recently, hey, it may seem a little crazy at time, but yeah, there is a method to the madness. Trust me when I say this, that he has your best interest in mind. And I think that can be the difference, that kind of that pat on the back, that boost or whatever, that helps him get through kind of that tough part of the season. And yeah, I think that's just, it carries a lot of weight when you do that.
Yep. Another thing that I had, Tony, was kind of like in the deal with the Iowa State situation. If you have a great team, here's the 10th anniversary of the 2015 state championship team from Kennedy or whatever it may be, and to bring those players back, to embrace them, to let them know that they are remembered, and to have those celebrations. And then, you try to tie that usually with a home game, maybe afterwards offer some sort of social occasion where you could sit down, even if it's teams, if it's a team or players that you didn't coach. It's good to get to know them and spend that time socializing with them afterwards. Take a little bit of your fundraising money and open up a tab and get some food and different things like that, and celebrate those great teams and bring them back and let them know that, once you leave here, we still appreciate all that you did for the school and what you did for the program. I think that's a really, really good thing to do.
I agree. We did one not that long ago. I think we recognized a team that they had won the state title. I think it was like the 50-year anniversary or something like that. And we also had a junior Cougar night as well. So here you are on the extremes of it. Kids that are going to play for us down the road and guys who obviously won a state championship for Kennedy, and they're out in the hallway together. And I just thought that was really cool to kind of look at the past and the future, if you will, there. And there was hardly any room in the gym at that time. I think we were playing an inner city team as well. So those games are always a little bit extra charged up. And it was a great, great environment. And so 100% would agree with that. And it doesn't always have to be just the state championship team. Sometimes it could be, a semifinalist or a state qualifier, or perhaps a conference champion. Maybe they got knocked off in their trip to state, but yet they won a conference title. And so I think those are fun. And when you can do that, whether it's every year or whether it's every other year, I just think those are really, really cool. And one of the things that's kind of nice, with basketball too, is you can recognize those other sports as well. It doesn't always have to be just basketball. Hopefully your school has a lot of multi-sport athletes, and you can take the time to recognize the baseball and the football and the track and so on and so forth, soccer as well. And I just think those are really cool things to do.
Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got three on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile, mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me or you on Twitter, or you can email me penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. What else you got, buddy?
You know, another one I think that's really kind of cool, and it would be this time of the year, maybe a week or two ago, would you be doing some of those, alumni games? I think those are really cool to do. I wish I had done them here when I was the varsity girls coach at Kennedy. I know within the recent past here, they've started to do those. And I know the boys before COVID, we used to do them as well. We haven't done one, I don't believe, since COVID. But I think those are really kind of cool things to do as well, where you bring back, you know, some of the greats in the past and let them play a little bit. And you can do that before, you know, you host a game or whatever. I just think those are really kind of a cool thing to have an alumni game where former players can come back on campus and go against each other. You know, those teams that are not that far out, those teams that are a handful plus years out, and those teams that are 10, 20 years out, whatever the case may be, and just let them play a little bit and make sure you let them stretch, because you don't want to have, you know, any pulled muscles or issues with that. But I think those are all kind of cool things to do, just to kind of have like a, you know, a homecoming, if you will, because you get the homecoming game in the fall with football. Yep. So you can kind of do a little bit of a homecoming, if you will, here. And then, like you said, have some of those social things on that one. You know, it could just be meet at your favorite watering hole that's close to Kennedy and just kind of, you know, sit back and tell stories. Remember those games from your not so distant past.
Yeah, we would do that a lot. You know, I had kind of an alumni night just in general, you know, hey, you know, on Friday, January 26th, it's going to be alums of, you know, Fort Calhoun girls basketball. We're going to have everybody come back. And we want all, if you're an alum, we want you back, you know, regardless of how well you did or did not do. And we also did like the alumni open gyms. We tried to, you know, keep them a little bit safer instead of having to play out in front of people. Maybe if they had threw up a couple air balls, they wouldn't feel so bad if nobody was in the gym. It was just a pickup game. But also it was great to see the players playing with your current players as well, you know, and this is what we could do, you know, and you would kind of see every once in a while you see them, hey, don't pivot like this, turn into me like this or whatever, or feel the defense this way or close out, you know, just little things like that. And those alumni open gyms were always a lot of fun. And like I said, we would always, meet up afterwards. I'd take them out, make them know, you know, how much I loved them and cared for them and all of those things. So, I think that's a good one to do as well. Simple stuff. I think Tony, can really build up your, alumni network, your alumni involvement, just simple things like text messages and phone calls for what I call life events. You got engaged. Hey, congratulations, Mary or Billy. You got, you know, so happy to see that you're engaged. Wish you nothing but the best. Blah, blah, blah. Or birth of a child, or God forbid, you know, you have the passing of a parent or whatever those things may be. You know, one of the things that I would always tell my kids is I don't want this to be a 4-year relationship. I want it to be a 40-year relationship. And I think consistently communicating with them after they've graduated, recognizing those life events. And again, some of that you can do. Again, we're a little bit more seasoned and experienced, Tony. We're on the Facebook more than the Snapgram chat things, you know, type of stuff. But, you know, those type of things, those messages, and it can be really, really, it doesn't have to be anything elaborate or over the top. It just needs to be really simple and really caring and a genuine concern or celebration for these life events that we all go through. I think that's something that you can really do to build a lot of credibility with your alums from your program.
And it's amazing to me how often when players graduate and they go on to their next phase of life, whether it's the military, college, work, whatever the case may be, that sometimes they you know, lose communication with each other, they lose touch with each other. And so what you're talking about, you know, with social media group like a Facebook, or you could do Slack or WhatsApp or whatever a thing that's out there, how you could set something up that like that, that could help current players and past players engage with each other and keep in touch that way. But I like what you're talking about. I think some of the, you know, neatest things each year is I get Christmas cards and updates from former players. And that's some of the highlights of my year, to be honest with you. I sit down and, you know, take a look at, oh, they had a new little one here. Or, you know, oh, their children have shot up, and you catch up that update. You know, they're getting promotions at work and, you know, this, that, and the other. And so those are always great things to receive and to keep in touch with them. And I 100% agree. It's not a 4-year relationship. Hopefully it is a multiple decade relationship where you stay in touch and, you know, root for them and what's best for them and see those things that they come across. You know, I bumped into a former player's mom when we played an away game in Cedar Falls the other day. And she was talking about how he, you know, works for this place and is in a high level position and credits a big part of it to me. And I was like, no. I was the one that benefited way more from being around them than they ever did from me. And yeah. So, you know, just those updates are a ton of fun.
Yeah, I agree. What else you got, buddy?
You know, another one I think that's important, and I think John is starting to do some of this. You know, we have a guy on our staff, Jeff Rubis, who played at Kennedy with Al Lorenzen, who played down the road at Iowa and stuff like that. Jeff ended up playing at Western Illinois. He came back, played at Coe, and then ended up, and he's been coaching at Kennedy for a while now. But that mentorship program where you have guys who have played for you in the past. They're now coaching. And then John recently also added a guy who's only 2 years out from playing for us is our head freshman coach, Kenzie Reed, and now is getting to give back to the future. And I just think that's so cool, having them in that mentorship role, whether it, you know, as being a coach or you're coming in and playing. And like you said, you know, just kind of teaching them the nuances of the game and giving them kind of the advice and stuff, you know, as far as things go. But I think that's really kind of a big deal with player and alumni mentorship roles. And like I said, it could be being on staff and coaching them that way, or it could be in another way, like a trainer or whatever the case may be, where you're just kind of building that in. And I think that's really kind of a cool thing where you see current players being connected with former players, basketball, but also maybe down the road, perhaps business and employee-employer type of relationships as well.
Yeah, I actually had that down as well. If you can recruit your former players to help out with your staff, or even one of the things that I tried to do, if it wasn't on staff, it was with our feeder program, our youth program. Hey, could you go out and be a role model to these 6th, 7th, 8th? Maybe you don't have time to do this 6 days a week for 4 or 5 months, but can you do this a couple of nights a week for a couple of hours, and can you coach some games on a weekend, you know, or something like that, you know, and so recruiting your former players to stay involved. And what that does as well, Tony, is maybe you have this former player that isn't associated with the program, but their best friend is one of those feeder team coaches or whatever. And so they're still staying involved, which means they're telling somebody else about it. And hopefully they're telling somebody else about it. And I think just those ties, those connections, it's not just that first layer of connection, that direct connection with the actual person that is there with you, it has a bit of a ripple effect, or it can have a ripple effect, because, you know, a lot of times, especially if they're younger, they're 24, 25, 26, they're just out of college, they might still be living in an apartment with three of their former teammates, and, you know, that type of a thing, or they're renting a house together. And so you're able to indirectly, even though you have only one person working with you, you still have three, you know, four of them staying in tune with what's going on. I think that's a pretty cool thing to do as well.
Yes, I would 100% agree, you know, with those feeder things. And, you know, we've seen that a little bit too, with some of our players being able to give back in that way. Maybe their job doesn't allow them to, you know, be on staff with you, or maybe we don't have any openings, but you can coach a junior Cougar team, less responsibility, less hours, but a way to give back. And I think that's a cool opportunity there as well.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing you can do, and this seems pretty simple, but we're talking about life events earlier, but mm-hmm. just, you know, birthdays, you know, hey, it's Billy Smith's birthday. Let's, you know, I want to send him a quick text message. You get invited to a wedding. You make it a priority to get to that wedding or whatever it may be. You know, and you really celebrate that on your social media page. Maybe you come up with some sort of slogan in some way, shape, or form. Like, you know, my daughter goes to Northwest Missouri, and one of their big things is once a Bearcat, always a Bearcat. You know, so different stuff like that you can implement to that with your alumni network. And you go to a wedding of a player who's, let's say, 25, 26, odds are that a lot of his or her teammates are going to be at that wedding. You can sit down, you can relax. Again, it's a completely different relationship than the one that you had with them 10 years before that. And it's just, it's kind of the fruit of the labor that you put in developing that relationship. Your player, you know, cares enough about you that they want their presence on the biggest day of their life. And so I think different things like that, you could celebrate those things as well and put out that effort. you know, to celebrate that and to make sure that they stay involved with your network of your community, of your program.
Yeah. You know, like you said, Morgan, I just think it's important to prioritize those things, especially the weddings. Like you said, you can kind of catch up with all of them, you know, because you'll have, you know, friends and stuff that probably played for you there as well. And I think one of the things that's kind of neat, you know, we were talking about Coach Finley a little bit ago. I think he does a great job on X of highlighting former players and their birthdays. And I just think that's kind of a cool thing that coaches can do. And I'm sure it means a lot to those former players that years later, coach still remembers their birthday.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So anything else, buddy?
You know, I think another one is just engaging in their celebrations. You know, you're going to have some great players that play for you that may end up in the Hall of Fame of your school, and being there for that. In fact, they may come to you and ask you to present them. But I think it's important to be there. And one of the things that Kennedy does that I think that's really cool is the athletic department will open up a tab at the place just down the road from Kennedy, pizza and tacos and drinks and stuff. And coaches and players that are getting inducted, they go down there and just kind of sit back and tell stories and you know, relive some great memories from the past. I think that's an important thing to be there for as well. You know, it might be in the middle of your season, you might have a game, but you know, once that game's over, I'm sure you can take an hour of your time and go down there, and it will mean a lot to that player.
Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Well, Tony, you know what means a lot to us as children of the 80s. You know what I'm talking about?
You bet I know what you're talking about. Little Europe.
I was going somewhere and I heard the final countdown and they actually played the whole song. And again, every time I hear the whole song, it throws me for a loop now after 114 of these or whatever. So it is my turn for trivia, Mr. Viss. Mr. Viss, are you ready for this week's trivia question?
I'm ready to get another one wrong. Here we go.
I think you've got a better than average chance of getting this one correct.
So, sweet.
All right. Excuse me. Right now, probably the most dominant men's basketball conference in the country is the Southeastern Conference. Right now, multiple bracketology websites, whatever the heck you want to call it, Tony, they have 12 of the SEC teams into the Big Dance. Now, that number is obviously skewed because of conference realignment and all this other chaos that we have going on with it. But nonetheless, 12 would be a record for most teams by one conference into the big dance. The record that they would be breaking is 11. What conference had the most teams ever into the NCAA tournament with 11 teams in 1 year?
The Big East.
Yes, and it counts. Do you know who played in the Big East, Tony?
We had Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing, yes, Georgetown. Hoya, hoya paranoia. You gotta believe it. Absolutely.
Let me double down on this, Tony. Do you know what year that was?
Ooh, no, I do not know the year. Yeah. I would guess early 2000s.
2011 is the year. Yes, sir. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, it was close enough. I mean, that's tough. That's a tough question, but yeah, 11 from the Big East. I could look up really quick here. I should have done this before. You know what? I'm not gonna. I'll keep looking it up here and see who was all in there. Well, here we go: Pittsburgh, Notre Dame, Louisville, Syracuse, St. John's, West Virginia, Cincinnati, Georgetown, UConn, Villanova, and Marquette all made the NCAA tournament that year.
That's a league. Holy cow.
Yeah, 11 out of 16 made the NCAA tournament. So, and that was the year I think Connecticut won it. That was the Kemba Walker year. They were only 9-9 in conference, and they went and won the national championship. So, pretty impressive, Elaine.
If I remember correctly, I think he hit some big shots in the Big East tournament to win it, too.
Yes, yes. And every time he hit one of those shots, Mel Allen said,
"How about that?"
That was a good transition, Tony.
That wasn't a bad segue.
That was pretty good. So, yeah, let's talk a little basketball. Let's talk about what's going on in the world. Let's talk about the SEC while we'll roll into that, even though that wasn't the first thing on the proverbial list, but we'll roll into it here. Obviously, it's been dominant right now going into this weekend. Five of the top 10 teams in the country are SEC, and not only SEC, but old school SEC teams. Tennessee 1, Auburn 2, Bama 5, Florida 6, Kentucky 10. Kentucky beat Florida yesterday. What did I see? 106-100. And I think that was
game.
Yeah. And was that in regulation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So that even makes it more impressive. It wasn't like there's a couple of imports that they got in there. Now Oklahoma's 12th, Texas A&M is 13th. And obviously with, 18 teams in the Big Ten and however many teams there are in the SEC and 16 teams. We're going to see more of this just because of this, but just pretty impressive stuff. And I've seen most of these teams play at least once on TV. Tennessee, obviously still undefeated. Auburn, very, very impressive. Alabama's played a killer schedule. Florida, despite their head coach's issues with some nasty allegations here, they have kept things moving in the right direction on the floor. And of course, Mark Pope coming in, kind of a mutually beneficial divorce between Calipari and Kentucky here, because it feels like he's rejuvenated at Arkansas, and they're having a solid year as well. So, what do you think, Tony?
I think the SEC, in terms of things, just super impressive. Tennessee took Arkansas out of the woodshed yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember who Auburn played, but they blitzed them at Auburn yesterday, too. Those are the two most impressive teams to me. And Iowa State is in that area code, and that young Duke team keeps getting better and better. But I really think the national champ this year is going to come from the Southeastern Conference.
The worst team in the Southeastern Conference right now is South Carolina. They are 10-4. They are at the basement of the conference at 10-4. There is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, You know, there's five teams that have one loss. Tennessee, obviously, still undefeated. And then everybody else, obviously, two or three losses. Your worst team is 10-4. Even us history teachers can do that math. Yeah. So, and obviously, this isn't going to stay this way because they're going to just beat the holy you-know-what out of each other over the next 2 months. It kind of feels like what is happening in SEC basketball has been what they've talked about with SEC football, with those teams just, you know, the best teams are in that conference, but they're beating the heck out of each other. And it's just, can you survive? Sometimes it's harder to survive the regular season than it is the tournament trail.
I must have missed when the SEC became a basketball conference because it sure appears that way. But, you know, you go through there. Obviously, there's been an upgrade in coaching. Chris Jans at Mississippi State might be the best defensive coach in Division I college basketball. Chris Beards at Ole Miss has them rated rather quickly and just having a lot of success there as well. But just a really, really talented league from top to bottom. Like you said, when you're 10-4 and you're considered to be the worst team in the conference, that's saying something about the quality of your league.
Yes, it is. And unfortunately, our next topic is no fun to talk about because it is a non-quality topic. It is Jimmy Butler, the ultra-talented yet surly personality. Would that be a fair statement, Tony?
I think that's fair.
Okay. He is basically, he hasn't played very much the last few years. When he has played, especially playoff Jimmy Butler, he's one of the best, you know, 5 to 10 players in the league. But as Pat Riley said, you got to play, you got to be out there, you know, and I've always said availability is the most important ability, because if you're not available consistently, it doesn't matter about everything else. Things reached ahead a couple of nights ago. Apparently he said some things at a post-game press conference. He's kind of dogged it. He's been as open as he can without saying it publicly that he wants to be traded, in large part, because he didn't get a contract extension from the Heat. You know, his side of things, he says, you know, look what I've done for this franchise. I've brought you to the brink of 2 championships. Reward me for my last few years in the league. The Heat look at it as, you're 35. You played for Tibbs for a few years, so really you're 67. You're only playing in at best 2/3 of our games every year, and most of the time not even that. Where are you at with this, Tony? Are you team Pat Riley or are you team Jimmy Butler?
Here's what I would throw at you. If they got playoff Jimmy Butler for 75 games during the regular season, he would be worth what he wants. But when you're getting him for 50, 60 games and the numbers are, I think he's like 17 a game. I think it's the lowest since his rookie season, if I remember reading something correctly. Uh-huh. Pat Riley, if I had to do a pantheon of great coaches, Pat Riley's there. He's on the Mount Rushmore. And so, you know, would I say Pat Riley has handled this thing perfectly? Absolutely not. I think he has made some mistakes with it. But if I'm going to err on something with being, you know, like you like to say, seasoned and experienced, I'm going to err with Pat Riley. Now, the thing I look at here is that what Jimmy's doing is taking away some of the leverage of the Heat, if you will, to be able to trade him. They're going to get pennies on the dollar rather than, you know, dimes and nickels on the dollar for him. And it will be interesting because I know some have talked about, well, you know, he could sure would be good if he went to the Warriors. I'm not trading Jonathan Kuminga for him. Jonathan Kuminga has a lot of good years ahead of him. And Jimmy's probably got maybe 2, maybe 3 more good years in him. I don't think you mortgage that for Jimmy Butler, this version of him anyway. I look at the load management thing and it's like, I don't know. I kind of sit back and shake my head. It didn't seem like in the 80s and 90s that was ever really a thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also understand you got to be smart about it as well, because you want to peak at the right time. But the Heat aren't going to get what I think they hope they would get for Jimmy Butler. But I think it's going to be addition by subtraction. If you listen to one of their captains, Bam Adebayo, he mentions it's sad to see, you know, Jimmy and the organization at this crossroads, but you know, they've changed some things. Like Jimmy's not going to be the focal point. He's going to be in the corner more often. They're going to share the ball. It's going to go side to side and different things like that. If he doesn't want to be a part of that, doesn't want to be a part of that. But they've got to get something in return for him, because the Heat, I think, are sixth, I think, in the East or something like that for the playoffs. And, you know, obviously, Boston's pretty good. I think everyone's playing catch up with them in Cleveland. And Miami's probably not looking at making the finals. But you've got to get something for him, because Bam's in the middle of his prime. Tyler Hero's having a good year.
Yeah.
And they've got some other pieces around them where they can be a dangerous team. They can win a round or two in the playoffs.
Want to take a guess, Tony? When was the last time Jimmy Butler played over 75 regular season games?
2016,
2017. Here's a crazy statistic, and I didn't realize this, and I don't know, I don't think any of these seasons had any major labor issues or anything like that. He has only played over 75 games twice in his entire career. His second year, he played all 82. And then that 2016-17 year, he played in 76 and started 75. Otherwise, 2018, 59 games, 2019, 65, 20, 58, 21, 52, 22, 57, 23, 64, last year 60, and then this year he's only played in 22 of their 33 games. So he's about on that same pace. I gotta agree with the management here. And here's the thing. You're talking about two of the biggest alpha dogs ever in Jimmy Butler and Pat Riley. And in a lot of franchises, Jimmy Butler would be able to kind of get away with some of this, but this is kind of the one place where he's not going to get away with it.
No.
Pat Riley is going to be like, "You think I can be stubborn? You think you can be stubborn? You ain't seen nothing yet." This is the guy that publicly challenged LeBron James at the prime of his career. Pat Riley, he's got the slick back hair and the Armani suits, but he's a tough son of a gun, and he is going to do what is best for the Miami Heat first and foremost. This is the guy that didn't re-sign Dwayne Wade, the greatest player in the history of the Heat. So he's not going to hesitate to do what's best for the Heat. And I think it's time to move on for both sides. But again, Riley's not going to make a bad deal. And I think that's where Jimmy Butler wants to go to these three or four places. Well, they're not going to sell the farm, so to speak, for somebody that acts like this, you know. And this is also the MO of Jimmy Butler. When he left the Bulls, he left it a dumpster fire. When he left the Timberwolves, he left it a dumpster fire. When he left Philadelphia, and kind of maybe that was maybe his situation where he should have been the most upset, because they invested in Ben Simmons instead of him, and that turned out to be not such a good decision. But that did not end well. And now we're headed to that same conclusion here. So this is, as Brian Windhorst often says, this is the price of doing business with Jimmy Butler. And this is where they're at, and we'll see where it takes them. If you had to bet, Tony, where do you think he might end up? Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the Opening Tip Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free. And hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is. If you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the Opening Tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing, is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here, stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success. And it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there, you know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it.
There's going to have to be a three-way. The one team that really interests me, and I saw this the other day, the Memphis Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes there, that would be very, very interesting, and I would think would make Memphis a really, really strong contender in the West. But when you put Jimmy Butler and Ja Morant and some of those cats together, that seems like an explosive cocktail recipe.
But they had Dylan Brooks and they were terrific with him, you know, and Jimmy in theory would be at least as good as Dylan Brooks. Probably a little bit bigger ego than Dylan Brooks, you know, who knows. I could see that. The Warriors are primed for a three or four to forward player for one type of trade as well. But again, like you said, are they going to give up Kuminga?
I think they're going to have to be willing to take like Pods and Moses Moody if they're going to get anything from Golden State.
Yeah.
And some draft picks.
Yeah. So, we'll have to see. So, Kawhi Leonard, Tony, back for the Los Angeles Clippers. You and I are seasoned and experienced enough to remember when a lot of people thought Kawhi was the best player in the league. Had 12 points and a win over Atlanta. What are the odds, Tony, that this turns out to be a long-term success and we see, we're probably never going to see peak Kawhi Leonard ever again, but what will we see? A pretty good Kawhi Leonard that is going to help the Clippers continue to overachieve this year.
Are there negative numbers here? Because that's where I would go with it. I'm not trying to be whatever, but he has not been able to be healthy for a long time. He might get out there 10, 15, perhaps even 20 games, and something else is going to pop up. And I've seen this movie before. I've seen the ending, and I don't think he'll be out there very long. And I would say this, Ty Lue must be the best coach in the NBA because what they're doing in LA with the roster that he has is nothing short of incredible. Mm-hmm. But he can get out there and help the Clippers, the overachieving Clippers. But you and I both know at some point something is going to happen and he's going to be out again.
Yeah. I think you're right there. I would love to see him get somewhere close to where he used to be. You know, because he was so very good at what he did, locking people down and defending and hitting. You know, his development as an offensive player was, you know, where he started to where he was at his peak was unbelievable. I would love to see it, but again, I'm like you, as George W. Bush once famously said, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, just don't try to fool me, is what I'm trying to tell you here, you know, so. Caitlin Clark, getting her jersey retired February 2nd. The Hawkeyes are hosting USC that night in perhaps the least surprising jersey retirement in the history of sports. Well deserved for Caitlin. I got a feeling that was going to be a pretty big game anyway, and they just made it that much bigger. So pretty cool deal for Caitlin Clark.
Very cool deal for Caitlin Clark. You know, arguably the greatest college women's basketball player in history. I mean, you take a look, obviously the all-time leading scorer, and you know, I thought it would happen soon. I didn't quite know this soon, but like you said, it went from a ticket that was probably, you know, $100 or whatever to now it is going to be a very, very pricey ticket that somebody might be able to sell and make a little bit of money off of.
Are you saying you might have a couple of tickets if someone is interested, Mr. Viss?
I am not, but I wish I did, because I would sell them.
We actually, do you remember when Nebraska had that volleyball game in Memorial Stadium last fall, or a year ago? You know, Carla got tickets like 6 months beforehand, and we paid like, I don't know, like $12 or $15 for a ticket. It wasn't very much. And it became such a big deal, and she was really cool about it. She gave us two tickets to resell for our fundraiser. Do you not want to know what we sold each ticket for?
How much?
$275, I think was per ticket. Yeah, not it wasn't bad. The program appreciated that at the time. So yeah, that was a nice little contribution. Thank you, Carla. If you ever listen to this, thank you very much. In my book, I kind of see you as Tony. Who you got moving on up this weekend? Who's up for you?
I am going to go with the New York Knickerbockers.
Okay.
You know, I think they've won, if I remember correctly, I think I heard they have won 9 games in a row, and they are starting to come together. Looks like they've lost. Okay, they have to have been 9 games, which they've now lost 2 in a row.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have put them on up there. But anyway, I just think they're playing really good basketball right now. And the team that I think many thought that they would be going into the season is now starting to show up. Carl Anthony Towns, they definitely won that trade. I didn't think they would. I thought Julius Randle would be a better fit in Minnesota. Kind of a segue there to my next one that I'll get to. but yeah, I've got the Knickerbockers as my team that's moving on up.
Well, let's talk about who's down then as well, because that's who I had as well, was the aforementioned Minnesota Timberwolves. And well, let's talk about the Knicks first. I agree. They did hit a kind of a soft spot in their schedule, Pelicans, Raptors, Wizards a couple of times, Yaz, but they did what they're supposed to do. You know, they won all the games. And in the NBA, that's a big part of your responsibility. Win all the games that you're supposed to win. And Karl Anthony Towns has been, like you said, Tony, he has been really, really good for the Knicks. He's leading the league in rebounding. A lot of people thought maybe the New York media would kind of eat him up a little bit. And that has not happened to this point, obviously, because he's playing really, really well. You know, now they're starters, which, again, hard to imagine with the Tibbs type of team. But also 5 starters are in double figures. They have played the most minutes together of any lineup in the league so far. Now, that will probably change a little bit with Mitchell Robinson. He'll be back, hopefully, sooner rather than later for their sake. They're probably a prime destination for some sort of buyout when that time period comes up here in about a month or so. They'll add one more guy to their depth and their rotation. So they're going to be a hard out, Tony. They're going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, I would definitely say Boston and Cleveland, because I just saw that Cleveland has won 10 in a row. But mm-hmm. I would say those two teams are better than them. But obviously, we're 35 games in. We're not even at the halfway point yet. And so I could see them in an Eastern Conference Finals vying for a chance to play for the whole thing.
Yep. You have the Timberwolves as your down?
I do. Yep. They've lost 3 straight. Anthony Edwards, It's been kind of, it's been interesting. I mean, you always get something from him when he talks. You know, he's talking about how he hated being double teamed all the time and making the extra pass and all that good stuff. So the other night he went out and scored 53.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this was a team, you know, that battled, you know, Dallas to get to the finals, upset Denver and all that. And this was kind of everybody's darling, including my own.
Yep.
And I thought that, hey, with getting Dante DiVincenzo and Julius Randle, you know, for Karl Anthony Towns, yeah, you might miss Karl a little bit, but I thought that, you know, with some of the guys that they had coming back, ready to take, Naz Reid being able to take more minutes and step into that role a little bit more, I thought this might be the team to come out of the West. Obviously, should pay a little bit more attention to OKC, who's won 15 in a row.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Timberwolves are a dumpster fire. You watch them play, and I don't know. It's hard to figure out their offense in as far as like the rhyme and the reason of what they're doing.
Agree with you on all points. When that trade came about, and I'm sure we talked about it, I know at the time I felt like the Wolves got the better end of the deal. I really did. More so because of DiVincenzo, but he's, you know, last year I think he averaged like 17 a game for the Knicks. This year he's only averaging, you know, just a shade under 9 points a game. I don't, you know, he's not shooting it nearly as well as he did last year. Last year it was around 45% from the 3-point line. This year it's 35%. You know, and I think that perhaps more than anything, and a lot of blame is going to go to Julius Randle, and he's the higher paid of the two guys, and he's the direct comparison positionally with Karl Anthony Towns. But DiVincenzo is the guy I really think that's the missing link that they're not getting that production that they expected from him. You know, Mike Conley is aging, so they need him to play minutes. And Randle, kind of a ball stopper. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, absolve him from any sins. He is kind of a ball stopper. At times, his effort when he is not playing well has been questioned by some. So I think there's a lot of moving pieces to it now. Again, 34 games into it, but it's not a good place to be coming off of Western Conference Finals. And, oh, by the way, they gave Rudy Gobert a big contract extension as well. So they're not going to be able to do anything with that. They're kind of out of moves, and so they kind of got to figure it out. The only move they have left is what could they move for Randle? I think they can move him before the trade deadline because of the terms of the contract or when the trade was done this summer. But that's about it. And maybe that's the move that they need to make and slide in Naz Reid into that starting lineup and let him roll alongside Gobert. I don't know, but. It's my down as well, Tony.
Yeah, just surprising. I mean, we've obviously have gone after the Bucks a little bit. We've gone after the Sixers a little bit. But this one is probably as surprising, if not more so, than their demises has been these guys. And, you know, you read through this roster, it's a very, very talented roster as far as things go. I mean, Anthony Edwards was the it guy, if you will. I thought Julius Randle would fit well by Gobert. And, you know, I like the fact that when they got Randle and DiVincenzo, they didn't get, you know, give Karl this huge thing that would have, you know, not allowed them to sign Anthony Edwards when it's time to re-sign him. Okay. And I just thought the move was really pretty good. But they've got a couple of nice young pieces, Rob Dillingham and Terrence Shannon.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe those guys need more minutes and you can move some of the older guys and get something, but I don't know. It seems like you know, the clock struck midnight and Cinderella turned back into a pumpkin again.
It's kind of one of those deals, don't you think, Tony? If you're playing NBA 2K, this feels like it should fit well together.
Yeah.
You know, but it hasn't. And you know, I guess that is what it is. So my up this week, Maryland and their women's basketball team, our old coworker down at Coach Finley's camps, Brenda Fries, they are now, after beating Iowa about an hour ago, they are 14-0. They have 8 players averaging 16 plus minutes. Kayleen Smicky is averaging over 17 a game. I didn't see the box score from the Iowa game. Like I said, that just wrapped up a little while ago. They were kicking the snot out of Iowa for a while there. They were up like 39-11 at one point or something crazy like that. You know, I forgive me if I misspoke the exact score, but it was a large margin that they were up on a quality Iowa team in Iowa City. Maryland had been, you know, as recently as 3 or 4 years ago in an Elite Eight level type of a squad. They took a couple years, a couple steps back here, but it looks like Coach Freeze has the Terrapins right back where they've been for a large part over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, Smicky, who you mentioned a little bit ago, she had 26 today. And then they were up 48-27 at the half. Iowa outscored them by 13 in the second half. But unfortunately, when you're down 21, my math doesn't get you more points than the other. And I think Iowa at the biggest deficit was 25, got it down to, I want to say, 5. But Iowa had won 20 straight home games. And Maryland, I believe, has 7 transfers in.
Wow.
And that was kind of the thing with Maryland the last handful plus years where they had superstars like Angel Reese and a few others that would transfer out. They this time used the transfer portal in their favor, got 7 in there, and give credit to Coach Freeze, because when you get 7 new roster pieces with what you have back, getting them to mesh like she has, she's done a phenomenal job.
Absolutely. So congratulations from the two idiots that you used to work camps with, Brenda. Way to go. Keep it going, you know. So episode 114, Tony, connecting with alumni, building your alumni network. Great stuff here. Anything you want to go home on, buddy?
The measurement of a great coach, in my opinion, are they still your kids? Like, are you still having an impact and speaking greatness into their life after they're done? I think that's huge as far as things go. There have been some really, really neat press conferences after the bowl games. And probably the coolest one I saw was the one with Boise State and their head coach, Spencer Danielson, one of his defensive linemen, what he had to say to Spencer. To me, that's the greatest win I've ever seen a head coach. And this was right after they got beat in the college football playoff, what he had to say about Spencer Danielson. That, to me, is the true measure of a coach.
Yeah, like I said, it was always in my mind, I wanted to have a 40-year relationship with my players. I hope most of them feel that way about me. I hope they do, because I certainly do about them. And I think it's important. And if you want to have a healthy, thriving program, I think it's important to have that alumni network involved with your current team as many ways as you possibly can. So have that be something that you're going to do as you move forward. So episode number 114, connecting with alums. Tony, good luck with your NBA schedule this week. What do you got, 3 games in 5 days, something like that?
We got 4 games. We'll play our first one tomorrow. So from Monday to Monday, we'll play 4 games. We've played 6 games so far, 2 of them at home. We're back on the road tomorrow, and I think we're on the road Thursday again, and then we go home cooking on Friday before we're back on the road next Monday. So 3 of the 4 will be on the road again. So we're getting ready for a little home cooking, just not quite yet.
Yeah, well, you'll get them going here. Keep the Cougars rolling and keep them moving in the right direction here. Episode 114, like I said, connecting with alums. Hope folks have enjoyed it. If you get a chance, if you're in the Omaha area and you need auto work done, go to Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. If you're in the market for a new-to-you automobile or truck, go to All American Used Cars and Trucks. Let them know that a pen and a napkin sent you. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft.